it wasn't until I was on the plane that I actually looked at the presentation, went straight to the last page, and it was terrible. The numbers were shocking, and this was like our best effort. And I'm thinking, how am I going to be able to present this?
There are a number of things that can happen that can actually impact the viability of the entire business, and it can happen really quickly.
The more I spent time in operations like this, the more I learned it's actually not about that. It's actually about people, and they usually know what the answers are.
And answers we shall get. Hey, I'm Penny Terry, and this is the first episode of Season 1 of Hotspots. And this season is all about the people. As we celebrate the 70th anniversary of the Bell Bay Aluminium Smelter in Tasmania. And it's their answers that tell us what matters. On this episode, we get the answer to that question, what happens when you put three general managers into a Zoom room?
I've got one more tip for you, Richard. Behind you is a safe, is that correct?
Correct.
I found somebody who can open that safe because I always wondered what was in that safe.
It turns out the three people you're about to hear from have wondered about each other often.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, we're obviously all passed batons onto each other over the times, and sometimes those batons get a bit ugly once you have a look at it because some things do come back to bite, but I'm sure we're going to have a great time.
So this is Ray Mostogel. He spent just over 7 years as the general manager at the Bell Bay site. And he said he's semi-retired, but he now wears many, many hats, including the CEO of the Tasmanian Minerals Manufacturing and Energy Council. But let's just rewind the clock.
So my first experience with Bell Bay was when I moved from the New Zealand smelter to Tasmania in 2001. And I came in as the services manager. So that's sort of engineering and power supply, and stayed in that role for a period of time, then moved into carbon ops role. Then I disappeared for 2.5 years up to Boyne Island. So I did a fly in, fly out. So I had 2.5 years up there as the maintenance manager, and then came back to Bell Bay in 2009, returned into the carbon ops role and business improvement. And then at the in 2011, I was appointed as general manager, and I hung on to that wild pony until about early 2018, and that's when I semi-retired.
Semi-retired. We've got you working today. I will come back to the wild pony description shortly, Ray. But Shona, on to you. What are the stats for you at the Bell Bay site?
Yeah, so Bell Bay was my first real job out of university. I started as a graduate, started 2004. Forever grateful for how I started, went on to red shift in the cast house, and I've literally got friends to this day from that crew and that time. Really grateful for really just having a go at each of the tasks back then, but moved into superintendent roles and whatnot on site. I then also moved up to Boyne for a large number of years, and I'll never forget the day when our managing director at the time called me and said, look, how do you feel about going down to Bell Bay as general manager? And for me, you know, a piece of my heart was down there, if I say it like that. And certainly having started down there and knowing so many people down there, I was always going. So I came back in 2020 as general manager after doing a lot of different manager roles at Boyne Smelter. When I came in, it was right in the thick of COVID lockdown. I was actually the last international or national movement in the whole of the Rio Tinto business specially authorised to get down there. They felt like they needed a general manager.
This is Shona Markham, and after she flew in, she stayed in that position for 2 years.
One of the interesting things stepping into these roles is that you've kind of got the custodianship of something that's got this incredible history behind it, these amazing stories, but also the weight of the future of it. And so that's what you're holding for that moment in time. That's what I talk about with my managers in any capacity, that we've got this little special moment in time that we're holding something that is both for the past but also for our future generations to come. And I think the other part is really easy for us to look back and say, well, why did that previous GM do that or not do that? But I look back with a lot of compassion, particularly knowing for Bell Bay's case, the age of the site, the age of the asset, and the complexity of being, you know, in a global market, trading at global prices, and what decisions that have had to happen over the years. A lot of people have worked really hard to keep that smelter running for a long time. And I think that's the compassion that I look back with in terms of previous general managers.
And now, Richard, we'll move up to you, and maybe the move has been just across sites a little bit more for you within the Bell Bay precinct rather than moving around Rio.
Yeah, very much so, Penny. I'm the new kid on the block. And, sitting here at Bell Bay at the moment, I'm very conscious that I'm sort of walking in the footsteps of Ray and Shona. And I hear lots of stories about Ray and Shona and what they did and what they didn't do and all those sorts of things. And it's almost like there's this kind of presence that you feel like you've got to live up to. But we're all different and we all bring our own different styles to this, which is one of the things that I like about this group and this site.
This is, of course, Bell Bay Aluminium's current general manager, Richard Curtis.
I do remember in grade six doing a school project on mining and minerals in Tasmania. So I probably had it bad from an early age. And in doing that, there was a chapter on manufacturing aluminium or smelting aluminium in the state. So naturally, Comalco, as it was then, featured in that project. And I remember I was talking to my grandfather at the time and he gave me this little aluminium ingot. He said, oh, you can have this. I got this from the opening of Bell Bay Aluminium. I was very aware of this place from an early age. And then when I was working across the road at what was Temco then in the probably early 90s, you can't help but notice Bell Bay Aluminium as you drive past. And, you'd see the carloads of people on the East Haven Highway all wearing a slightly different uniform. And it was always somewhat a black box to me, but, well, more of a silver box, really, because across the road was more of a black box than this place. Yeah, you certainly got to know about this place. And I could sort of watch it from the outside develop, the new scrubber system and some of those things going in. It was quite ironic in the end that after I went back to Liberty Bell Bay to as GM to then be asked to come across here and have a look at this role. So it was my third smelter as a GM in the state. So I guess while Ray and Shona talk about the history of this place and what it means, I sort of have a view of the history of smelting in the state and what that means. And I certainly feel the weight and the importance of that and the significance that these industries play in this state and in the communities in which they operate. So I'm having a great time here. It's a very professional operation, great people, and I just really enjoy that aspect about working here.
Richard, if we talk about leading with that weight, what does it mean to lead a place when there is that connection from community, from the whole state?
I think what it means is, what it means to me is that I feel an enormous responsibility and it's present all the time. And you probably feel it more when things aren't going right at a site like this. If there's been a significant incident and you worry about how that projects into the community, if there's a serious process interruption that could threaten, the very being of the smelter, you absolutely feel that because you know it's not just the people that work here and their families. It's also the community. It's all the suppliers. It's all the economic churn that a place like this generates. You feel those pressures, but you can't be too distracted by it. You've got to focus on what's at hand and get through it. But they're ever present. I don't know if Ray and Shona feel that as well. I imagine you have it at different times.
I remember really distinctly when I was moving down to Bell Bay to take on the role of general manager, the New Zealand smelter had just announced strategic review at the time. And there was a lot of pressure on the aluminium business prices and a lot of uncertainty with COVID as well. And I remember thinking, knowing the weight of those connections in community, the connections on site and how much that site means to so many people. And it made me think about, how do I feel about taking this role? And it just made it even more important for me that I went down there and gave everything I had to make sure that that site, one, had a future and people were treated well. Those two things were really, really important just from that framework of understanding what the place means to people. There was a number of days where I'd get a phone call and I knew that, okay, we have minutes or hours to make some really good decisions here to keep the place viable. The first thing happens, your heart rate elevates. I can tell you, you have to breathe for a minute and think, right, who are the people that I need to call in right now? And that's where I've, in every instance I think about, I was able to get a hold of somebody, and they're just so skillful, so capable, and that's what's kept the site running.
Ray, as you look at that wood grain cabinetry behind Richard there, I wonder what moments come to mind for you about those critical moments Shona's talking about.
So for me, one of the biggest challenges was whether the smelter was going to stay in operation, whether it was going to be sold. So for me, actually, the biggest moment actually occurred in Brisbane and in a taxi. The decision had been made by Rio to create Pacific Aluminium and get it ready for sale, which was really exciting. But there was a point in that exercise where it was pretty clear Rio Tinto didn't particularly want to keep these assets. And I thought, okay, this is interesting. And but the bit that really got me was when Pacific Aluminium said, well, we're not sure we want Bell Bay. So we were sort of stuck in the between because we were perennially a poor financial performer, you know, particularly compared with the other smelters, which were much larger in scale and technology was much newer. We had to really turn things around quite dramatically, and to Pacific Aluminium's to credit, you know, the likes of Sandeep Biswas and Brian Cooper, they really provided every possible opportunity to turn things around. But I do recall going to Brisbane to present Bell Bay's case to stay in business, and I literally received the presentation from my business improvement manager and the consultant as I got on the plane at Launceston Airport. So I hadn't just downloaded it and got on the plane. It wasn't until I was on the plane that I actually looked at the presentation, went straight to the last page, and it was terrible. The numbers were shocking. And this was our best effort. And I'm thinking, how am I going to be able to present this? And there was a presentation with full of macros, and I couldn't change anything. I couldn't do anything to make the numbers better because I didn't know how to. So it was like, oh, I'm going to have to present this. This is going to be absolutely terrible. But I was able to. There was the last slide where I could actually put some words in. So once I saw what the numbers were, which were not good, I changed some words in that. But I then presented it the next morning. I was the first cab off the rank, room full of all the site GMs, all the consultants. And it was ugly. It was, you know, slide by slide, it was painful to present to my peers just the numbers for Bell Bay. But when I got to the last page, that was the first time I got a nod from Sandeep, because it sort of said that, you know, if this is not acceptable, then, you know, we'll come back with a better plan. If that's not acceptable, then suggest we get rid of the management team, myself included, and bring in a management team that can do it. And then the final option was, and if they can't do it, then close the smelter. So that was what the slide, read to the room. And that was the time where I think, yeah, certainly from Sandeep and Brian and others realised that, yeah, okay, the site actually understands what's on the line here. So, and we were in the midst of asking for pay rise because it was that time of the year. So I got in the taxi to go back, and I just rang the team and said, there's no pay rises. There's none of this. We're not doing this. We're not doing that. And that was the moment where we really started that transformation to turn things around. So, we had union pressure on the site at the time. So a pay rise was sort of, you know, almost obligatory. But to say no in the midst of a fairly strong union campaign, but that also got the message across to people that, okay, this is serious. You know, this is not something we've done very often. So, that was the turning point. And that opened up an incredible experience of working with people to turn things around.
It's interesting because I think that Rio Tinto, and maybe this happened over my time while I was GM, Rio Tinto had a bit of a shift in some of its thinking, and definitely spurred on by both the Everyday Respect report that was released and also the Juukan Gorge disaster in WA, where Rio really had to consider what it was there for. And I think fortunately we were able to talk about what we mean for Australia and what we mean for Tasmania. And the fact that we are a green smelter in Tasmania, and therefore how important we are for, and, you know, I remember this chart, it was jobs per megawatt, essentially. So, you know, in a jobs per megawatt analysis, if you're going to have all this wonderful electricity in Tasmania, then actually aluminium smelting is a very good way to invest and have quite a few employment opportunities on the back of the power that's being generated in the state. And I think the narrative changed while I was down there as general manager about, okay, what is it that Bell Bay can give back to the state and therefore and the country? And in the midst of some real change in thinking around the Rio Tinto leadership at the time, it was a really powerful moment. And for me, I remember, I'll never forget my last day, very last day on site. I'd actually sent a goodbye, I've loved this experience email to the whole site. And I walked out and as I walked out on that day, and I made sure I wasn't leaving until this day happened, we had a press conference with the Premier and our CEO out the front of the site. And they were signing a memo of understanding about, working together. For me, that was a really big shift in how Rio had viewed the smelter and also how the state viewed the smelter and really understood the importance of it.
Shane, I think I can sort of relate to that. And we also had a press conference when it was decided we would stay at Pacific Aluminium. We had a power contract. We were going to keep the lights on. And, I still remember the Premier and the politicians in the office that Richard's sitting in at the moment around the table. I assume the round tables might still be there. But anyway, all the media were there and, it was rah, rah, rah. And it was the day that the announcement was made. But interestingly, it was when the cameras had all gone and the media and the politicians had left, I walked around the site and one of the tradesmen just came up to me and just shook my hand and said, thank you. And I remember that clearer than the detail of all the press conferences and the bits and pieces. And I guess that's the thing at the Bell Bay. It's that sort of personal contact and the meaning that the role has and the business has way beyond the balance sheet, which is the point that both my peers have made. It's and that brings responsibility. That brings responsibility when there's children coming through school that are looking to work there. Mum and dad are there, the grandparents were there, and that's you can't measure that, but boy, you can feel it.
I wonder about that because, I mean, the whole of Bell Bay makes headlines a lot, and it has for a long time. I mean, aluminium markets change, power prices spike. There's always a new story that people can talk about. I wonder. What do you see in the GM role that perhaps the broader community of Tasmania don't see or isn't reflected in the media?
Penny, I think, sorry to jump in here. The way I think about it is yes, we're doing all this work to keep the site open and thriving, but what's important is also that you're doing the work to make the lives of our team safer, more engaging, more interesting, more diverse, whatever the thing is. And so, it wouldn't be uncommon for me to walk around the site. I love that aspect of the role. And I just get sucked into conversation for hours. And it might be about someone and their family, but it also might be about the little things, seemingly little things, but are really key things for that team member in that day. And how can we make their lives better? And that's a really important part of the role, is being able to give direction to the site to say, this thing that is really a problem for this person in their day is something that we actually have to prioritise and we have to do.
Can you remember something like that where you were able to make a change, Shona? I put you on the spot now.
Yeah, put me on the spot. Hopefully I can just rattle them all off, right?
Yeah.
The one that I come back to, and it's not even when I was general manager, but I appreciate while I was there as a superintendent, actually, we had an explosion in the cast house, and I'll never forget the day that we made the decision to go hands-free casting at the BDC. And it was on the back of a pretty big explosion. We had metal that had almost touched the roof of the cast house, and we made a call overnight that we are casting from within a control room. And for me, and that's a standard, coming back as general manager and noticing that that was still in place and that was how we ran and how we ran for all the years in between. For me, there's moments like that where, we took a step change in safety that day and had to take some courageous calls. And I was really well supported at that time by my manager and my general manager to make that call in the cast house on that day. But you know, there's a lot of examples like that, and there's a lot of small ones. I'm just trying to come up with another one for you. I'm sure Ray has one.
Look, just a little one, and it sort of started from exactly the point that Shana just made. When I first arrived at Belvane, and this story refers to the uniform that Richard's wearing right now. So when I arrived in 2001, people at the smelter wore light blue shirts. And that was the standard issue. And it was during a safety interaction with, it was a boilermaker. And he said, do you realize these shirts, molten steel spatter goes straight through these shirts? And, you know, you get these little burns on your skin. And I had no idea because I thought we had clothing. And anyway, found out that the clothing we were using was great for aluminium, but not good for temperatures above 1,000 degrees, which is what steel is. So that conversation sparked a team coming together. We found out about the fact that the clothing wasn't good for carbon dust because it was too porous, so people were getting dust through onto their skin. So we changed the uniforms, and it all came from that. So today's uniform originated in that conversation. And the light blue was actually, this is a little bit sort of out there, but the light blue was people said, you can't clean it. So even though I come to work and I've got a washed shirt, it's got stains all over it. And I actually feel, I don't feel like I'm a valued person when I come to work wearing dirty clothes. I don't mind getting dirty at work. That's part of the job. But if I start the day in clean clothes, yet they're full of stains. So that's why we got rid of the light blue and you're wearing what you're wearing today. So, which was, you know, sparked from a conversation, yeah, just the willingness to take something like that on, but having an organisation that allowed you to do that as well. I mean, that's a big change to change the uniforms, the clothing, and I guess there's lots of examples where people have contributed, you know, their little bugbear. It's been listened to and acted on, and I'm sure there's lots that haven't been, but boy, there's a lot that have been as well.
Richard, were you aware of the history of the uniform you're wearing there?
No, I wasn't. So I've absolutely learned something today. As I usually do when I'm talking with Ray and Shona.
I've got one more tip for you, Richard. Behind you is a safe. Is that correct?
Correct.
I found somebody who can open that safe because I always wondered what was in that safe.
I
will connect you.
Back up the track here. There's a safe in the GM's office that
in
can't be opened. What?
In a cupboard.
It's still there.
Never been opened.
Do we know how it got there? Why it's there?
No idea.
It's probably got the titles and the deeds in it.
I don't know. It might have somebody's safety glasses and a cup of tea. I have no idea what's in there.
Oh, my gosh. That's a whole podcast in itself.
I will connect you with the safe crackers, Richard.
Does anyone know what this is?
That's the
What are you holding up, Richard? What are you holding up?
It's a little press that embosses the company seal onto official documents. I remembered making one of these for the government of Tasmania once in another role I had back in the 80s. So I had a clue about what it was. So I stamp every notebook I have with the common seal of Bell Bay Aluminium these days.
Oh, he's holding one up to the screen. Who else has used it? Shona, Ray, have you used that?
No, I saw it. I knew what it was, but I never had the wherewithal to actually use it like Richard is.
Yeah, well, it's a nice little throwback, isn't it? I think I said Bell Bay Aluminium. It was the Comalco common seal.
I mean, clearly there are stories that live inside this place that lay people like me will never get to know about. Richard, I wonder if there's a moment you remember from your time there, even though you're a new kid on the block, that still gives you goosebumps when you think about that moment?
Probably the biggest moment that gives me goosebumps, and probably not in a great way, was from last Christmas, actually. I remember getting home on Christmas Eve and the asset manager giving me a call and saying that issue that we had with the pitch circuit in carbon, which is fundamental to being able to make the anodes needed to keep this place going, he said, we've still got this issue and we're in a bit of trouble now. And I just turned around and came straight back and worked straight through Christmas with the team trying to get that circuit up and running. You know, we're basically on the verge of digging out the remaining anodes we had from the carbon bake furnace. If we hadn't been able to correct that, the place would have shut down. And I can't imagine that we would have been prepared to spend the hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars needed to get it going again. So that stuck in my mind. And I remember walking back from the pump house with one of the more famous operators from Green Carbon, and I reckon Ray and Shona would know who that is. And Mr. Jocelyn said to me, why are you so down? It's not something that you did. And I said, mate, it's because of the conversations that we've had about, you know, you and your family, and you want your daughters to be able to work here. It's about, you know, the 540 people that work here. It's about all their families in the community, all the businesses and those sorts of things. So that's what's weighing heavily on my mind at this point in time. So that's why I'm here, because this is important. Yeah. So that those moments give me goosebumps. Of all the smelters I've worked at, this is the one where every part of the process is just so closely matched to the next, and a hiccup in one can cause a cold in another and a bad case of the flu in the next one. So, yeah, those sorts of situations give me goosebumps. At the same time, out of those situations, out of those adverse conditions, you usually find little moments of genius and dedication, and some of them aren't so little. There's a lot of dedication, and people pitch in and get stuff done, and you steer the ship away from the rocks. And that recovery gives me goosebumps too.
How often is the smelter sort of one move away from shutdown, and then perhaps a possible cost that may not be paid for to carry on? I mean, how real a risk is this when you're sitting in that chair?
I think the risk is real, but we do an awful lot to avert it and make sure it doesn't happen. So it doesn't happen often. That was an exceptional circumstance in my view. But one of the things that makes me feel uneasy is that sometimes those things come out of a place you don't expect. And all the asset integrity work, all the risk management that we do, hadn't identified that situation. So makes me wonder what else is out there at times. So you've always got to keep an eye on those things.
Ray or Shona, can you empathise with this idea of always having to be aware? Oh, gosh, look at your faces.
Yes. There were many instances when I was down there as general manager where we actually had to dig in because things weren't right. I remember one day, and I think this story shows the strength of our support in our local community, and particularly our contracting group. I remember one day we were unloading a ship and we had a particular fine cargo of alumina, and high winds, and there was some alumina that went over the immediate car park area and then into broader Bell Bay. And it was, you know, utterly unacceptable to be putting alumina into the community like that. And so I took the decision to go and see or call all the small business owners and all the different contractor in the local region about this issue. And I was pretty new in my time. And the thing that struck me was the amount of them that said, you know, thank you for calling. And yes, this is an issue, but this business is so important to us. Your business is so important to us. We want to be part of your story. We want to be part of your future. And we understand how complex a business you have. I got an overwhelming message of support back when I was ringing to say, we need to be better. And so it goes to show that it's broader than just our community inside the gate. It's our community outside the gate, and all, you know, that really do have a great deal of support for our business.
Shona, you make a great point, because it's often unseen what the contractors and the suppliers do. But, I mean, they go to extraordinary lengths to support, and they don't get the accolades necessarily because they're not there at the official, you know, when milestones are reached. But it's a strength, and all of us have been involved with the Minerals Council, and we sort of talk about the fact that we've, as a state, we've got this incredible supply chain of really savvy businesses that know all about the criticality of working in with molten materials and the time pressures that are on everybody when you've got a 24/7 process that really can't tolerate disruption. So the human side that allows you to keep processes running is huge. So, I have absolutely no doubt that Bell Bay's story, Comalco story, is certainly got contractors and suppliers woven through it incredibly. You know, it's just, it's a strength. And you don't see that in all the areas where there are, major industrial plants. I mean, you know, generally you get good support, but I sort of see so many times where people go above and beyond because they also value that longevity, and they understand that it's important from a community point of view. So there's that felt pressure that is actually shared.
What does it take to maintain that human side? Maybe this is a question about culture, not just inside but outside of the smelter as well.
it's part of the fabric of that is Bell Bay. And I've tried to explain it when I've been on other different sites around Rio and outside of Rio. And honestly, it's like a family. And it is like a family. There are multiple families working there as well. You see surnames and you think, hang on a second here, I know that name. But people dig in to a level that is really quite remarkable when there's a time of need. The connection, the level of connection and the level of connection back to that, the pride in that site is something that many other businesses in Australia and globally could only dream for.
Have there been any times where that pride was at risk?
I think there's certainly been times through the history of Bell Bay where tensions have run high. I think we're all standing here leading in a time post, you know, the 80s and 90s, and I hear the stories from the GMs back then and through rolling strikes and these kind of things where there was a really big divide between, I'd say, staff and union, I don't know, philosophies, I guess, but there was a big divide in symbolism. And so, you know, a lot of things have changed in terms of accessibility of the general manager, symbols around equality, working to, you know, that, and that's something that the site has actually worked really, really hard on over many years. And to be honest, in my time as general manager, enjoyed some hard work from the leaders through the 80s and 90s, I'd say.
What does it take to keep a 70-year-old smelter running? And I might throw this one to you, Richard, because you're the one who's in the hot seat on the 70th anniversary, who's keeping it running. We've talked about it being an older smelter, and I just wonder how you would tell the people listening to this about the future.
One thing that I try to challenge is that the age of this place should not be a disempowering belief. Yes, it's in its 70th year, but it's actually still a pretty good asset. And it's easy to talk it down based on age, but I've worked in older places. You know, the zinc works in Hobart, it's coming up to 110 years old. If you want to see an old smelter, go and have a look at that one. Now, this place has been upgraded in different ways, in different areas throughout the years. So it's a bit like grandfather's axe in many ways. I mean, sure, the fundamental technology is still pretty old and it punches well above its weight. So, yeah, we can't let age be the thing that makes us see this place differently, because it's actually a really, really good asset and it can do a lot of things and it should have a bright future. I think the other part in creating that bright future is making sure we're managing the process really well. And if I think about the last couple of years, yeah, we've had some of those events that have caused us to sail fairly close to the wind. But I tell you what, our recoveries have been pretty good, and that's because the health of the process has been essentially really, really strong. And with the stability that comes from that, you get credibility for your operation. And so then we start to see more investment, or it becomes easier to attract the investment that we need to keep the place upgraded. And so, you know, if I look at some of the things that we're working on at the moment, and we've had the funding approved for upgrading, you know, all the anode fleet throughout the smelter, and we're over a third of the way through that already. And that seemed like almost an impossible project a while ago. We've had approval and we've got the order placed for a new ingot casting machine that will actually be able to take the entire production of the smelter. That's something that was probably wanted back in Ray's time, I imagine.
Going, well, you got it through, and Ray's going, yeah, why else for that?
No. Yeah. So orders placed, that's being fabricated in Spain at the moment. It'll be here installed and running by mid next year. Yeah. You know, so, but you've got to earn that right to play, you know? And that's what I think the teams are getting better at. And certainly seeing this place as a business that they have ownership for. So good at cost management, good at safety management. You know, that can be a fragile thing, we know. Good at process management. That, and those things are what will create the future for this place, and keeping the engagement right and the culture healthy.
In listening to you talk today and share your stories and, I guess, the ideology of the place, I've been hearing from past employees, been hearing from community members about the impact that the smelter's had on their life. And I wonder what comes to mind for you if you think about whether or how Bell Bay has changed you. Shona?
Yeah, I spoke earlier about Bell Bay feels like it's part of my soul, and I kind of mean that. I really value the relationships that are really important in my life. I met my husband at the smelter, actually. The relationships and the people that I've met are actually, to me, they're more than just colleagues, and they've really influenced who I am. The other thing is, I think starting my career at a site like Bell Bay, where we do innovate, we do solve problems. Yes, we've got a lot of problems to solve, but we do solve problems. Has set me up in terms of the way I approach work in general. It's really impacted my entire career to look at something and to go, right, well, how can we make this better? Or how can we make this better for our team? And you know, having those deep relationships into our team members, our you know, operators and maintainers, and then that has really impacted my entire career. So I think it's so much for me. It's my relationships. It's how I approach work. It's my philosophy around what's important in leadership, all being impacted by my time at Bell Bay in different roles.
Right?
Yeah, I think for me, it's the realization that, and this was like a cold shower type moment, but as a leader, your questions can constrain your people, right? So if you put boundaries into your questions, then people might achieve your boundary. But gee, if you hadn't constrained it by that, you could have gone further. And I learned that. I learned that that I really needed to be a lot more thoughtful about the questions that I asked to not impose my constraints on some creative thinking. And that, you know, I guess that paradigm for me has been loud and strong. And in fact, you know, after I left and I was doing a lot of presentations to other organizations around the sort of the transformation, I finished with that slide. I said, you know, who do you reckon had to change the most? And up came my picture. You know, it wasn't about the people. They were there ready to go. They just needed to be unleashed and motivated and have the right context. So it was sort of the reality was that, gee, I've actually been holding the site back because of the way I was thinking. So that's the bit of humbleness that has come from that for me, that the people around you, doesn't matter what their role is, what their name is, what their background is, don't constrain them. Set the context and give them the opportunity to shine. And boy, it's a lovely thing to see.
And Richard, how's it changed you so far?
I've changed and mellowed over the years in businesses like this one. Like a lot of people in these roles, in this sort of business, you come from a reasonably technical background. In my instance, it was engineering. And As a young whippersnapper engineer, I used to think, you know, the truth lay in good sort of engineering and good process solutions, and that's what would earn you respect and enable you to take yourself and a place forward. And the more I spent time in operations like this, the more I learned it's actually not about that. It's actually about people, and they usually know what the answers are if you can create the right space and the right environment for them to exercise their creativity and surround yourself with the diverse thinking. Because, yeah, if we're all clones of the same ilk, yeah, we don't get that richness of ideas and challenge that we need to make a place like this succeed. So that's what's changed in me in my years in this industry. And I just keep learning so much from those around me, and we're all just people who put one foot in front of the other to move ahead. And we all have something to offer. So
it's been so wonderful hearing the stories today. Just before we go, it's the 70th anniversary. Is there a message for those who are listening, past, present, potential employees, contractors, people who have been influenced or affected or impacted by this site over many years? What's the message on the 70th birthday?
I think the message is that this place is so much bigger than the physical asset here, and all those people who have been here before, and the generations of them, and those who are here now, are making it that thing, and they can make that future. It's a small smelter by world standards these days. It's probably a third the size of the next biggest smelter in this country, but it was the first in Australia, the first in the Southern Hemisphere. There's a rich heritage. And the engagement and the creativity of the people here is what is needed to carry this place and keep it punching above its weight well into the future.
Shona?
Happy birthday, Bell Bay. You know, I think everyone who's been involved with Bell Bay should be so proud of their contributions. And, you know, I really look forward to the ongoing long-term contribution of Bell Bay to Tasmania and to Australia.
And Ray?
Yeah, look, I think it is a fantastic achievement to get to this point in time. But there's a real sense that there's more to be done and there's still a future out there. And I think that's so important for Tasmania. I think it's so important for the Tamar Valley for kids to have those opportunities for, you know, the careers, the lives that can come from this. So, you know, the people that are on site today, yep, they're looking after themselves and they're running a great operation, but they're also, you know, getting it ready for the next generation. Kids are sitting at school at the moment in Georgetown or down in Launceston or wherever. We want to make sure that they've got an opportunity to work there if they want to. And I think there is that sort of sense of passing the baton on to the next generation as well. And you know, I just congratulate everybody at Bell Bay for what they've done to this point in time, but also for what they're doing to make sure it has a great continued future.
Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks Penny.
Richard Curtis, Shona Markham and Ray Mostogle, bringing us their stories from the General Manager's office at Bell Bay Aluminium.
Thanks guys, good to catch up.
Likewise, Ray.
And as they continue to catch up, I want to let you know where we're off to next episode.
I'd applied for a job that said young men interested in careers in engineering and accounting and chemistry, please apply. So I applied and they said it was the first time they'd actually ever had a female apply.
People panicked and they'd just take off and it'd just come down on them like rain. Like, you had no helmets and nothing in those and you had cotton, you know, work clothes and it just burned holes, just like little marbles running down your skin.
In my time there, computers came in and there was certain elite people that got to use computers.
So. Elite people, was that you?
No, it was more like the GM's PA.
Yep, next episode we are going to hear some unbelievable memories from some of the longest serving employees. I'm Penny Terry and this is Hotspots, a podcast that gives us a chance to look back on 70 years of people and moments that have helped shape not just an aluminium smelter, but a community. And I can't wait to bring you more of those stories next week.